Hello and welcome back to episode 5 of the VoiceOver Talks podcast. This is the penultimate episode of series 1. So to make sure you don't miss the launch of series 2 and to find out more about the podcast, you can visit voiceovertalks.com or join the VoiceOver Talks group on Facebook. This week's guest is a super talented voiceover artist with an incredibly unique voice and perhaps an even more unique story to go with it. She worked for many years as an on-set camera operator and currently works as an actor, documentary producer and voiceover artist, lending her voice to leading fashion brands such as Paco Rabanne and River Island to name a few, as well as multiple video game characters over the last few years. I'm very excited to welcome the wonderful Catherine Vinclair. Catherine, thanks so much for joining me this week, and how are you?
Hey, Scott. I'm good, thank you. That was a really sweet introduction.
You're very welcome. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And thank you for being here.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Before we jump into the interview, I just wanted to play a short sample of your work, if that's okay.
Go for it.
Awesome. Just take a listen to this.
From Sunday Times best-selling author Anthony Horowitz comes his twistiest murder mystery yet.
No. No, don't try to help. It's contagious. You need to leave. Now.
You have traveled far. It does not matter if it was by choice or chance. But the life you had before today is only a memory.
Welcome to Janie and I, your personal online boutique. With sustainable designers you'll love.
What the?
Hello, Isaac. My name is Eva. I'm your emergency assistant. You are aboard your habitation capsule, approximately 150 miles above the surface of the Earth.
That last spot just gave me chills. But your voice sounds amazing and so different to many of the female voices currently out there. Normally, I like to start off by asking my guests to tell us about what they're up to and the work that they're currently doing as a voiceover artist. But I think the story behind your voice is so unique and I think a great place to start. In your own words, you are a voiceover artist with broken vocal cords. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, of course. It's a real oxymoron, isn't it? Well, from a technical standpoint, it is vocal paralysis. My left vocal cord has been completely paralyzed from birth. I've always been able to speak because even though my vocal cords don't work in the way that reeded instruments work, in that they vibrate and that helps create the sound and they work together, the tiny muscles in my larynx, called vestibular folds, they learnt to mimic the vocal cord movement.
Wow.
So that I can speak. So what you're hearing when I speak is not your typical setup. I've just got some, I suppose, slightly smaller equipment that wasn't originally designed to do this job, that's just learnt naturally to adapt and give me the ability to speak, thank goodness.
And to have given you such a unique sound as well, that's amazing. It's such an incredible story, and I guess one that has enabled you to now follow a career that you love, that you perhaps wouldn't have had without the vocal paralysis.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm one of those people that's always been told, oh, you've got a really interesting voice. You should be on the radio. That old cliche. But I also know that there are so many voiceover artists that have grown up hearing that, and that is what encourages them to get into the industry. To be perfectly honest, I was just quite aware of its limitations growing up, because I wasn't thinking about going into voiceover work. When I was younger, I was just working on getting my education and working in other fields. So I was aware of the practical challenges that come with this voice. It can be something kind of frustrating, like being in a loud bar and the volume of my voice is not as strong as an average voice. I'm incapable of screaming. There are a lot of sort of guttural sounds that talented voice actors seem to be able to make that I literally am incapable of doing. So it was just a case of learning to live with it, whereas walking into a voiceover career where your voice is your primary selling point, it's been a chance to really, really re-educate myself on what this voice is capable of doing really, really well.
And I think what's great is that your voice has so many qualities that other voices or other voiceover artists are often required to mimic in an unnatural way, you know, for that husky, intimate, intense read. So it's amazing that your normal speaking voice is able to project some of those qualities in a way that to you is, I guess, completely natural. Do you find that with such a unique, seductive and calming and actually quite intense voice, do you find that there are particular types of work or areas of voiceover that you are more in demand for with such a unique sound?
I'd say anything that involves a characterful voice, however you or anyone in the industry would want to define that. So I think gaming, audio dramas, audio books, anything where you want to create a strong sense of atmosphere and personality just through the voice alone. This is the opposite of the kind of voice you hear in things like medical e-learning narration, because you can't listen to this voice and not try and assign a character to it or an atmosphere to it, because it sticks out like a sore thumb.
It does, and as you said, it just creates an air of mystery, and I guess particularly around characters, that's a fantastic quality to bring, where before you've even said anything, really, people are already getting a sense of depth to this character. But I know a lot of the character work that you do tends to be the rather villainous characters as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Something about this voice seems to evoke hell and heinous apparitions and, usually necromancer queens that are building armies of undead, or a sort of Game of Thrones-esque badass that's looking to overthrow a small country or something. Yeah, usually very entitled, wealthy, royal, privileged types that only care about themselves. Apparently that's what people hear in my voice.
Well, on the flip side to my last point then, because of your vocal paralysis, have you found it harder to find work in certain areas that maybe you'd like to be doing more in?
Well, I'll tell you what, as much as this voice is characterful and does inspire casting directors, the inability to scream and to do some more of these sort of high-pitched, non-verbal sounds that are often given to female characters, I'd say probably more than male characters, like screaming, has cost me jobs a couple of times already, and I'm only a few years into my career, and I see it being something that continues to sort of stalk me, unfortunately. It's tough. If I could scream, if I had that in my toolbox, there's always a part of my mind that thinks, well, might I have got that job if I'd had that ability? But I prefer to see it as nothing to worry about too much, because if it's literally something I cannot do, then the job should go to someone who can.
But I think because your voice brings so much character in what is a completely natural voice to you, is going to be so appealing to a lot of casting directors and producers.
Yeah, 100%. And I would argue that there are many, many ways to evoke panic and struggle and fear or happiness or joy and delight in non-verbal ways through your intonation and through other sounds that people can make that don't involve every female character having a sort of high-pitched moments when the tension really ramps up. What I love about a lot of the more villainous characters that I've played is that quite often I've given a couple of different styles of read to the client, and one of them has been the big booming voice standing on a clifftop talking to some small army. And then I'll do another read, which is the exact opposite, and I get right close to the microphone and I half whisper it, and it's slow and quiet and brooding, and play off of the intensity of that. And more often than not, the client prefers the more intimate style. So I suppose it is just a case of finding the characters where that suits them the best.
Yeah, and quite often less is more, as you said. Sometimes rather than screaming or shouting something to portray fear or anger, actually doing it in a very calm and intense way can be a little bit more unnerving sometimes. Prior to discovering the world of voiceover then, tell us a bit about your background in theatre and in production.
Yeah, I was hugely into theatre growing up. I devoured plays by Stephen Polyakov and Pinter and Stoppard. So I was clearly always really interested in the idea of taking a script and working with a character and bringing something to life. In my teenage years, I was part of the National Youth Theatre of Great Britain, which introduced me to an idea of more formalised training for acting, looking at movement and voice and objectives of characters and all of that stuff. I was deliberating going into acting when I unexpectedly got into film school and got a degree in film production and cinematography. So then when I graduated, I moved to London and then worked in various camera departments as a trainee, as a clapper loader, as a camera operator for feature films, short films, music videos, commercials, all sorts of things. I wasn't entirely sure if I wanted to solely be a camera operator. I took a couple of jobs in production, which led me to some pretty interesting places. I ended up being a producer for Playboy TV for a short while, which was a crazy nocturnal existence, unlike anything I have ever and probably will ever experience again. But safe to say, I was just throwing myself into different opportunities and seeing which ones I wanted to stick around in.
Well, it sounds like you've had a very varied career so far. And from this point then, how did you first discover voiceover and how did your voiceover career start and then transition into full time?
Well, there came a point a few years ago where I started looking into audio as a hobby. I am a bit of a tech nerd in that I always loved, with cameras especially, learning how to work with specific parts of cameras and bits of kit and equipment, how to get the best results from them. And when I was reflecting on the rather diverse work that I'd been getting in the industry and some of the more full-time work I'd been doing as a camera operator, I thought, well, I know cameras and I know lighting and I feel like I've kind of figured that out. What I haven't really understood yet is audio, to the point where I felt a little embarrassed at my own inability to work a microphone properly and understand it as well as I understood anything to do with cinematography. So I bought myself a microphone and was just curious to learn about treating a room. I was learning about how to cut down reverb, how to fight the good fight with noise floor. As I learnt more just about the technical side of it, the word voiceover was cropping up more and more frequently. So I thought back to the thousands of comments I've had across my lifetime of people saying, oh, you've got a very interesting voice. And I thought, well, maybe I could try it. So I just, again, for fun, treated my office, made a makeshift booth, made some homemade reels, and started auditioning on ACX for audiobook work. And I got a booking, and at that point I decided to just go full-time from the very beginning.
Oh, wow.
There was no interim where I was doing voiceover part-time. I respond well to a pressurised situation, so I knew if it was a sink or swim, I would have to find a way to keep afloat. I wouldn't recommend that to most people because it's a...
I was going to say that's a pretty impressive leap
indeed
for faith to take.
I'm not sure if it's impressive, more just foolhardy, but it's an extreme way of living, and I'd say most people will benefit more from doing the opposite, from doing voiceover part-time initially until they build up a client base.
Absolutely.
You've just got a few maniacs out there like me, I suppose.
And to jump straight in at the deep end with an audiobook as well, I mean, when I first started voiceover back in 2018, just a few months after having started, I attempted my first audiobook, which I was just thoroughly unprepared for in terms of not only the technical capabilities at that point, but also the physical and mental stamina required. I think it was around 150,000 words in total, and I actually had to throw in the towel and pull out of the project around 20,000 words in because it was just so time consuming and draining. So it's amazing that you were able to jump straight in with this and to make a success of it from the start. And although you work full-time as a voice actor now, I know you're still doing some production work and you're currently working on a new documentary at the moment. Can you tell us anything about this?
Well, let's see. One of the side projects that I started during lockdown, I set up a documentary production company, Flight Path Films, and what has happened over the last year is that it's just grown and grown and grown, and what was going to be a short documentary, maybe 20 minutes, localized to the UK, looking into the lives of women in aviation, has grown into a global feature documentary that we're just about to start crowdfunding for.
Wow, that sounds incredible. And it's amazing that you're able to do stuff like this on the side of your work as a voiceover artist.
Yeah.
And it's one of the many things I love about working in voiceover is being able to explore a whole range of creative outlets that sort of go alongside it.
Yeah.
You know, I know a lot of voice actors that work in sound design or drawing and animation or theatre and video game design, all that kind of stuff. So it's amazing to be able to do that alongside your main work. Coming back to voiceover then, what training and resources or courses have you taken that have really helped to forge your voiceover career?
I'd say the one that helped me the most wasn't a single course. It was just everything that Gravy for the Brain has to offer to an absolute beginner. It helped me understand the process of correct editing, the technicalities of having a good quality recording space. I think it really helped me prioritise the quality of my recordings. And I think that was a very vital thing to understand, and something that a lot of voiceover artists, when they start out, sometimes don't fully comprehend until perhaps they've sent a few files to a client in the early days and the client has said, can you clean this up a bit? Can you make this a bit more polished, please? And how much easier it is to have a good quality recording space rather than edit everything in post and try and save it in post-production. And the good thing about Gravy for the Brain is that it breaks everything up, so you're not deeply intimidated any more than you ought to be at the start of your career. You have a chance to sort of take things piece by piece and understand just how crucial it is that you learn to become a business.
Yes.
As much as you learn to record good voiceover, because none of the work is going to land in your lap for you. You have to go out and find all of it yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people often talk about the good old days when you had an agent sourcing all of your work for you and dealing with all of your bookings and admin, and you just went into a studio and had a sound engineer take care of the recording side of things for you, a producer to edit and process your audio, and all you had to do was turn up and say your lines and head off home again. But of course, the reality today is that voiceover artists are expected to themselves be the talent, but also build and run their own studios, become an audio engineer, a producer, as well as being the head of their own marketing departments, their account departments, sourcing all of their own work and running their service as a full business. So yeah, I think Gravy for the Brain is a great resource in that sense, because it also goes through all of that business side of voiceover as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, last year you voiced the character Eva, who is an onboard AI system in the feature film Solitary, and we actually heard a short clip from the film earlier as part of your voiceover showreel, which sounds amazing. Tell us a bit about the film and how you landed the role and what it was like to work on.
Yeah, absolutely. Solitary was a real treat to get to be a part of. It's a lovely sci-fi film that's set just in one location and relies on the quality of its script and characters to present a wider world outside of this tiny space shuttle. I received a rather out-of-the-blue phone call from a contact that I'd worked with maybe 6-7 years ago now. So she just called me up and said, listen, we've been looking for a long time for the right voice and we've been struggling, but I've just heard from someone else that you now do voiceover. So would you be interested in giving it a go, in just auditioning and seeing if you're a good fit? So I sent off an audition and got a very positive response back. So I actually recorded everything for that feature remotely from my home studio, and I remember how wonderful that entire recording session was, because you've got the director, Luke, and myself, and we're both strong sci-fi fans.
Star Wars or Star Trek?
I'm a huge Trekkie.
Ah, come on, it's all about Star Wars.
Oh, gosh, I can't believe I'm talking to you, honestly. I will fight you and I will win on this, but we'll wait till the podcast is over.
Bring it on. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Not at all, not at all. So yeah, no, I'd just got back from a holiday to Florida, where I'd gone to the Kennedy Space Center, and so I was full of all of my space geekery throughout the entire recording. So it was a gorgeous mix of lovely conversation with someone who is just as passionate about that world as I am, whilst being able to record something specifically to do with sci-fi. So it was a lovely coming together of some very lovely worlds.
Amazing. I must admit, I haven't seen the film yet, but I've seen the trailer quite a few times. And obviously, aside from your voice sounding great, visually the film looks incredible too. But I think your voice just really suits that sort of sci-fi, futuristic, AI type voice that we've seen in so many sci-fi films over the last few decades.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot you can do with this idea of an AI voice. It's been explored really nicely in sort of, should we say, less nerdy sci-fi films like Her, where Scarlett Johansson did some phenomenal voice work. The idea of a disembodied voice and it being so clearly inhuman, but having such a potential for human quality of contact and connection and character behind that voice is something that's always going to fascinate people. So we'll never have a shortage of fascinating AI voices in any kind of sci-fi context.
As you mentioned, you've been working on audiobooks as well. Do you mainly work on fiction or non-fiction? And are there any particular genres that you enjoy narrating?
Well, this is where the other side of me has to come out, because everything that I seem to be cast for to do with audiobooks is sort of Austen, Regency, drama, romance kind of novels, which is kind of the other side of the coin. But I like that, and that's something that's so gorgeous about this job, is the diversity of what you can be placing yourself into in terms of the context of the characters you're portraying. I really enjoy those genres because you learn so much about those eras just from getting to bring those books to life. It makes a nice break from the very technological world that we live in. It's very charming to get to frolic around in a sumptuous Austen period drama for a day. That's a nice break.
Yeah, well, we can all do with a break from reality sometimes, can't we? What's one thing that you wish you had known when you began your career in voiceover?
Oh, gosh. That everyone's career trajectory will look completely unique. There's no set route to take. And sort of following on from that, for every great resource that's out there, there's a barrage of ego-stroking nonsense from people who have done brilliantly in the industry, but have then made the mistake of telling beginners that their way is the only way or the best way. It would have been nice to have had some sort of filter to be able to block out the elitism. The idea that you're not a proper voiceover artist if you haven't got X, Y, and Z. In terms of equipment, in terms of training, that would have really helped with my confidence in my own abilities earlier on.
I think that's such an excellent point, and I found it exactly the same when I started out, and it sort of comes back to the reason that I started this podcast in the first place. As you said, every voiceover's journey looks completely different, and there's no set path to achieving success, and actually a lot of the routes that many of these established pros out there took to get where they are in some cases just no longer quite as relevant. And you know, the exponential growth of the internet and the rise of the online marketplace has changed the industry completely. And I think you have to remain so adaptable, because with the rate of changes that we're seeing, without that ability or willingness to move and change with the times, I think there's a very real risk of getting left behind.
100%. No, 100%. I'm such an advocate for just throwing the rule book out, because it doesn't matter. It matters to people who need that rule book to validate the way that they have built their career and make them seem like they've done it in the finest way possible. But it's such a different industry. I don't like the way that pay-to-plays are vilified, and I don't like the way that sites like Fiverr, for instance, are vilified. Because whilst they are doing damage, it is also just the way that a lot of people are looking for voiceover artists now.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And I think a lot of these sites and voiceover marketplaces are still still sort of in their infancies, really, relatively speaking, because the industry is just moving so fast. And at the moment, we're in this transition period where a lot of end users of voiceover are now going direct to voiceover artists. A lot of companies now have their own in-house production teams, and there are so many new startups now as well, and things like social media adverts and a lot of online advertisements now, they're so easy to make. And because of that, companies are able to do a lot of that themselves, whereas before they might have had to outsource all of that sort of work to large production companies. So they're able to go directly to voiceover artists themselves. So I think because we are in this transition period at the moment, there are so many conflicting views about how these sites operate, and there are absolutely some kinks that need to be ironed out, but I think they are here to stay. And so the best thing that we can do as voiceover artists is to work with the owners of these websites and these platforms to help form something that works for everyone.
100%. You know, you can't just pretend that it isn't happening. But then there are a lot of pay-to-play sites that are just looking to make a quick buck. The barrier to entry on some of these less professional pay-to-play sites is often negligible, if it even exists at all.
That's a really interesting point about the barrier to entry for some of these sites. And actually, some of the guests that we've had on the show previously have had differing views on this. We had Timothy from episode 3 had said that he used to use these pay-to-play sites, but because the prices now have just gone up so much, they used to be, you know, $20 a month, and now the basic memberships start at $400-$500 a year, all the way up to $3,000-$5,000 a year for some of these premium tier memberships. And because there are so many of these pay to play sites now, if you want to be active on all of them and not be missing out on all of these opportunities, it's incredibly expensive to be a paying member of all of these pay to play sites. And it's a huge upfront investment, aside from your equipment and your studio and your training and everything else that you're having to spend money on. But then we had Toby Ricketts on last week's episode, who had a differing view to that, and he basically said that that barrier to entry, even if it is just a financial barrier, not necessarily a talent barrier, but having some sort of barrier, even if it is just financial, at least stops these sites from becoming completely saturated, because if they were free, then you'd have hundreds of people going for every single job, and clients would be sifting through hundreds of poor quality auditions, and the likelihood is that yours just wouldn't get listened to. And even if it would, there would be so many people on there who perhaps don't really know what they're doing or don't know what their voice is worth, who would be offering services well below what they should be worth, which of course is then driving rates down. So I think that's a really interesting point that you made about barriers to entry, and whether that is financial or talent-based. It's definitely an interesting topic that needs to be explored, I think.
It's a question of ethics on the part of the business owners of the pay-to-plays. This isn't about gatekeeping. This isn't about saying that only established voiceover artists should be on pay-to-plays because people who are just starting out shouldn't be allowed to have the chance to audition. It's not about that at all. It's about the quality of the norms that are accepted within the industry for everyone working within them. So like you say, it's does your audition get listened to? Are you being paid a rate that actually represents what you should be getting paid?
Absolutely. I feel like we could do a whole podcast episode just based on pay to plays. Moving on a bit from there then, Catherine, what's your proudest voiceover achievement to date?
It's got to be the commercials that I have done for Switzerland Tourism. The first commercial I did with them a couple of years ago was my first ever international commercial. And that on its own felt wonderful. It was really exciting to send that invoice and to get to work on a production of that scope and scale. But truthfully, the reason why I love it that much is because Switzerland is my favourite country. It's where I've always dreamt of living. And it felt exceptional to get to represent and show off this beautiful country that I have adored all of my life. And to have my love of Switzerland and my love of my career come together so succinctly was just magic.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, it's always amazing when you're able to combine two real passions together, and anyone will know when there's a project that revolves around something that you're particularly passionate about. It just makes it so easy to work on, and I think the joy and the passion that you have for it really shines through in the work that you do there. Catherine, do you have any really embarrassing moments in your career? Hopefully ones that you can look back on now and laugh.
No, absolutely. I'm cringing back here because it's such an understandable mistake that I made one time, but one that is deeply embarrassing. I was sent this really, you know, very, very well-written script, and it had a character in it named Catherine with the exact same spelling as my name.
I can see where this is going. This wasn't the character you were meant to voice, was it?
No. I should have voiced another bit. And I didn't. And I went full throttle into this Catherine character that was had nothing to do with what the client wanted from me at all. And I should have recorded another part. The client was very understanding and took it all in their stride, which saved me from sleepless nights, but not from the cringe I'm experiencing right now. It's just one of those things, you know. Everyone's going to make mistakes like that at some point in their career. It doesn't matter who you are. It's going down.
But in your defense, though, quite often you get scripts where the producer has listed your name next to a character, and sometimes it's the character's name and you have to read your lines that way. I mean, you never know. They might have turned around and said, actually, we love you for that character too.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for anyone who may be interested in or who has dabbled in voiceover in the past but is really looking to take the next step into voiceover?
I'd say in terms of practical things that you can do relatively inexpensively, you should be looking at treating the space that you record in. Whether that's getting a few extra coats for your closet because that's where you're starting out with your recordings, or whether it's investing in some audio blankets or doing what I did and make your own acoustic panels, because I haven't got hundreds of pounds to be spending on them. I didn't when I started out. Think about the quality that you're providing people before you've even touched your audio in post-production, because it doesn't matter how good you are at voiceover. If you can't provide really, really top quality recording standards from whatever your home setup is, you probably aren't going to do very well in so much as everything is remote, especially since COVID. There will always be space for studios to open, but when you're just starting out, you're probably not going to be looking to totter down to Soho and jump into a studio there to do recordings. You're going to need just a solid setup at home. I'd say that's the most important thing, because at the end of the day, if you are inexperienced, the value that you are providing to people who are paying you isn't coming from your knowledge and your previous experience in the industry. It's coming from everything else that you can offer. And one of those main things is that you can record really good quality audio. On a less technical standpoint, I think the best thing that anyone who wants to get into voiceover or take it to the next step can do is to reach out to voiceover artists who you admire, reach out to people who are at the level that you'd like to be at, and just ask a couple of questions. Just get a dialogue going. There are countless courses available to teach you the technicalities, but in terms of understanding the everyday experiences of being a voiceover artist, the finest thing that you can do is start to build some connections. Not connections so that you can make money, not connections so that you can show off to your friends about you knowing the voice from the such and such ad or whatever. I mean, people that you're going to become friends with, people that are going to become part of your personal voiceover community, not something you have to pay for, something that you can just build up out of the goodness of everyone else's hearts in this industry.
Absolutely. I think that's an excellent point about reaching out to a mentor or someone you aspire to within the industry, you know, completely separate from any formal coaching, as it really allows you to ask the more personal questions and to get a real sense of what it takes to be working at the level they are at. that and to see what qualities from that person you can bring to your own work. And I think people will be quite surprised at just how helpful and encouraging and supportive the voiceover community can be. Yes, it's a very competitive industry, and in many cases we're all fighting for the same jobs. And yes, there may be some who will try to belittle or ridicule newcomers to the industry out of spite or to try and make themselves feel a bit better. But for the most part, the people within the industry are fantastic, and without that sense of community, it would be a pretty lonely existence as a voiceover artist.
Absolutely. Make no mistake, it's a challenging industry to make a living from. If you want to make a quick buck, there are plenty of other places you can go to that will give you more stability. But in terms of understanding the journey that you're about to go on in your voiceover career, the best thing you can do is to get a mentor. I mentor a couple of voiceover artists who have just started in the last couple of months. And by mentor, I don't mean I charge them a fee to have a conversation. I mean just as and when we drop in and out of Zoom calls with each other, where I can just answer some questions and or even just help reassure them that they're doing the right thing. Because having that positive reinforcement in the early days, when you've got 1,000 different things telling you, do it this way, no, do it that way, no, do it the right way, it's just numbing. And these talented people who are just starting to step into the industry deserve to know when they're getting it right.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I just hope that that sense of community continues to grow as the industry does. Catherine, what excites you about the future of the voiceover industry?
Now, this was a fascinating question. And I think it's got to be the rise of artificial voices, AI computer-generated voices, and how that's going to change the landscape and the meaning of what it is to be a real-life voiceover artist. Because I think it's going to render a lot of our industry rather null and void, which is petrifying. But it does also mean that we have an opportunity to really flex our human side and remind clients just what they can get out of the authenticity that can come from having a voiceover artist who knows not only how to record a script with a particular intonation or a particular emotion or a particular energy, but how to interpret it. Because that's the link that machines will take a very long time to match up to humanity with.
They will. And there was a webinar that I attended a little while ago about AI voices and the software behind it. And there's no denying that it's what it's able to do is pretty amazing in terms of portraying feeling and different emotions to help bring a character to life. But what struck me was just the amount of additional work that goes into fine-tuning all of those elements. So
yeah.
The software developers were showing how you can select a certain word within the sentence and then change the intonation or the tone or the inflection to get the desired result. But then, of course, you have to sort of tune an entire sentence, which takes a lot of time, a lot of trial and error, just to get a single sentence that sounds pretty okay-ish. And what struck me is the fact that as a producer or a director or a video game developer, for a long, long time at least, although this technology may be available, it's going to be so much easier to just have a real actor to record the line in the exact way that you want it, first time in a couple of seconds. And so while it might be useful for, you know, small characters or, you know, an NPC with just a single line or two, to fine-tune an artificial voice like that for any character with more than a single line of dialogue to the point where it's convincing enough not to break immersion for the viewer or the player would just be far too much work for anyone to take on, and would just be so much quicker and cheaper and easier to simply hire a real voice actor.
That's such a good point.
Yeah, and then you've got, like, on the commercial side of things as well, it's the sort of thing that, you know, there are millions of voice actors all over the world, and that gives such variety to everything we hear on TV, on the radio, in games, everywhere. And even if there were 10,000 AI voices created, going from a million unique voices to just 10,000. And obviously on a more local scale, when you're talking about various regional accents, artificial voices will very quickly become very recognisable and overused. And not just because they don't sound human, because they might well do, but the actual voices themselves will be so overused because there just isn't as much variety out there that companies will want to shy away from them because they are clearly artificial voices, or they are being overused across a whole range of different products and services and companies. So I think that uniqueness of the human voice is what will ensure that AI voices don't replace us.
Well, I'm potentially very biased in my excitement of the rise of artificial voices and the necessity to have a unique voice. I understand that, but also, I mean, I agree completely with everything that you've just said. But also to say that artificial voices can be as convincing and compelling to listen to as a real performer, a real actor, a real voiceover artist, is to take away from every single decision that an actor has made in their performance. The minute you take away the actor, you've completely removed another influence on what you get in your final product. And I think all it takes is to look back as a voiceover artist at the positive feedback that you've had, because every voiceover artist will have this, the positive feedback they've had from clients, where the client will say, "You've done so much more with this than I originally thought when I was writing that script." And that's the difference.
Absolutely. I think that's beautifully put. And I think it's also worth, in the future, keeping an eye on companies like Amazon with their Alexa device and Google with the Google Assistant. And at the point where those voices, the Alexa voice or the Google Assistant voice or Siri, at the point where they start sounding indistinguishable from humans, and I mean, you know, you ask them a question and they can read you the answer back in 100 different ways and it sounds like a different sentence every time. It doesn't sound pre-recorded or artificial. Once these absolute tech giants, the biggest companies in the world, can start putting into their flagship products voices that genuinely sound indistinguishable from human voices, that's when we might need to worry. But at the moment, if the biggest companies in the world in AI are putting out voices as they currently are, I don't think we've got anything to worry about for a long, long time. Just finally then, Catherine, what voiceover goals have you set yourself for the coming year?
Well, we're about halfway through the year. So in terms of annual challenges, I'm sort of halfway between things. I've not been setting myself specific goals, principally because a lot of the progress that I want to make in my career is to do with being able to see people face to face. For instance, I would quite like to get an agent at some point in the next 12 months, but I don't want to start that process until I've had an opportunity to meet with agencies face to face, to go to talks that they hold and get a sense of the vibe in the room. And I think it's such an important relationship and I want to make sure I do it properly. And I think that can only really come about if I have complete faith in who I'm going to be joining with professionally. So I want to really wait until the world has opened up a bit more so I can actually get out and start shaking hands in person. I mean, I'm a huge fan of structure in my sort of day-to-day voiceover career. I need to have a schedule. I need to know exactly what's going on when. But when it comes to the blue sky thinking of where am I going to take this and where's this going to go, I'm quite happy just to sort of go with the flow and see what opportunities arise. Because then you get to just enjoy the journey rather than constantly fighting to get to the next ladder.
And that's a really nice way to look at it. It's one of the things I love about the job is not knowing what's coming next. It always keeps things fresh, and I think that's a really nice way to look at it. Catherine, thank you so much for taking the time to come on and talk with me this week. It's been great to have you here, and thank you for sharing your story and your journey so far with us, and I hope we can catch up again soon.
Yeah, I'd love that. We'll wait until the lockdown lifts and people can travel more freely again. And yeah, it'd be good to meet you in person.
Absolutely. And hopefully there'll be some VO conferences coming up over the next year or two.
Yes.
Once things are back to normal.
Fingers crossed.
That was the wonderful Catherine Vinclair. You can find out more about her work at voiceovervinclair.com, or you can find her on Instagram at Catherine Vinclair or on Twitter at VVinclair. Next week is the final episode in this first series of the VoiceOver Talks podcast, and to ensure we end the series in style, I'll be joined by the biggest name in voiceover in the country. Having voiced over 30,000 TV and radio commercials, 250 documentaries, countless video games, and perhaps best known for being the voice behind shows such as The X Factor and Britain's Got Talent, it is the legendary voiceover man himself, Peter Dixon. You won't want to miss it. To find out more about the podcast, or if you'd like to get involved in Series 2, you can join the VoiceOver Talks Facebook group, or you can visit voiceovertalks.com, or you can contact me directly via Scott at tunixvo.com. And I'll see you next time.